They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A little automotive surprise.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Just ahead of an auto sales report that comes out tomorrow, Ford reported a quarterly profit this morning. Analysts were expecting a big loss. It says it got to profitability by cutting costs, improving credit results, and increasing its market share. One up, one down. Add CIT Group to the mix of largest bankruptcies in the country. Hundreds of thousands of small and medium-sized companies use that business bank as a primary cash source. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is live with us this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Mitchell.
Good morning.
So how does the bankruptcy affect all those businesses?
Well, this is a prepackaged bankruptcy. It's got the blessing of investor Carl Icahn. So the hope is it goes smoothly and it's done by the end of December. You know, this matters a lot to what I sometimes call the real economy of buying and selling things. CIT is the main provider of inventory financing that lets manufacturers fund their operations. That lets about 1 million retailers get goods onto their shelves in advance of actual sales.
So it sounds like we dodged a bullet then.
Well, sort of. I mean, keep in mind, even if CIT gets back on its feet, it's already been cutting way back on small business lending. And according to Rich Grida, a finance professor at the University of Portland, there's not much capacity in the banking system to pick up the slack.
We're still looking at the capital gears not running like they should be. So anything that disturbs that is bad. And small business is the key to this thing, to getting people to start investing again and then spending again.
So aside from those businesses affected, Mitchell, are there any big losers here?
Well, CIT stockholders, to start with, they're probably wiped out. Also, the U.S. taxpayer, we put $2.3 billion into CIT, and that's probably gone. You know, but keep in mind, that's out of around $700 billion for all of the financial bailouts. $2.3 billion is real money, but it's not a lot of money by comparison.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman joining us this morning. Mitchell, thanks.
You're welcome.
Let's check numbers. Markets are mixed right now in Europe. Asian markets closed lower today, but the Chinese benchmark rose more than 2.5%. Someone said it was fall on Wall Street, and sure enough, stocks dropped in October. The S&P and NASDAQ dipped last month. The Dow was flat in October. Later this morning, the Supreme Court hears a case that might weaken long-standing investor protections in the mutual fund industry. Marketplace's Steve Henn reports.
The case is called Jones v. Harris, and it could end up rewriting the rules that protect more than 93 million Americans with mutual funds from unreasonably high fees. It began when three investors sued their mutual fund company, arguing that the fund's investment advisors were overcharging them. They say they paid higher fees than institutional investors did, and it's not fair.
That's the comparison we need.
William Byrd Thistle is a law professor at Chicago Kent Law School.
Institutional investors are very sophisticated. They're watching very closely, and they can take care of themselves very well.
Byrd Thistle believes many small investors are routinely overcharged. But Paul Stevens at the Investment Company Institute says costs associated with smaller accounts are proportionally higher than those for large institutional investors.
It's not even an apples to oranges comparison. It's kind of an apples to watermelons comparison.
And he says if small investors don't like the fees they're charged, they can always put their money somewhere else. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at economist.com. And by Nova, Becoming Human on PBS, The Evolution of Evolution. Nova, Becoming Human, Tuesday at 8, 7 Central on PBS.
Big bonuses have been a sour point for the majority of those who work away from Wall Street. And Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan's been taking note of this big gap that just keeps getting bigger. He joins us now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Steve.
You know, I'm curious about this because we know how the bonus system works on Wall Street and all that, but how did these bonuses get to be millions upon millions of dollars?
Well, it's a formula. Now, a million years ago, when Wall Street was private and people wanted to keep their fixed costs down, you worked for basically survival wages, and then you got a piece of the action afterwards. Now that most of these companies are stockholder-owned, they have a bonus, and on Wall Street, bonus does not mean what it means in the real world.
So what's the difference then?
In most of the real world, a bonus is something for extraordinary effort and extraordinary accomplishment, and it's a bonus. On Wall Street, it's generally part of your base pay. They just call it a bonus for historical reasons, and the word bonus itself is complicating the relationships because Wall Street guys feel entitled because they consider it compensation, and people on Main Street who don't know this world, no reason they should, think it's outrageous because what have these people done other than take government bailout money?
But it still feels like there's this tension here. I mean, what should we do about these bonuses? Should we call them something else?
First, we should call them something else, but I was an English major and I actually care about words. On Wall Street, they care about money, so that's why they don't call it something else.
Yeah.
Second, at least this year, the real heavy hitters in these firms ought to be smart and take nothing in the way of bonuses and say, we got so much money from the government and we have benefited so much that the money we would normally pay as bonuses, we're paying to the U.S. Treasury. Now, I think there are two chances of that happening, slim and none, but I think that's what I would do if I ran a Wall Street firm. Then again, that's probably why I'll never run one.
Fortune magazine's Alan Sloan with us this morning. Alan, thanks.
You're welcome, Steve.
And finally, you may have heard about the Canadian musician David Carroll, who was angry at the way United Airlines baggage handlers threw his six string around. So he immortalized it in song.
'Cause United breaks guitars. Yeah, United breaks guitars.
The tune became an instant YouTube sensation. Last week, on a recent trip to Colorado to deliver a keynote address, the same airline lost his luggage. We will fully investigate what regretfully happened, a spokeswoman told the New York Times. Regretful for whom? With all this unlucky airline business, you can't buy this kind of publicity. From Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.